So you go to Ball State and you get this degree, bachelor of whatever, we don't know yet. And what do you do after that?
Well, through a friend of mine at the ABC affiliate in Indianapolis, where I lived, which was 60 miles away from where I went to school and still is just about 60 miles, I heard that they were auditioning for – they wanted a summer announcer. So I went down there and auditioned, never having been in a television studio in my life, and got the job. I mean, it was a fixed fight because I had no business getting the job. I wasn't very good. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no experience. And they gave me the job. And suddenly the bulb that was turned on my sophomore year in high school now is burning white hot because it's, are you kidding me? I'm 19 and I'm going to be on TV. I mean, it's preposterous.
And what kind of job did you have?
I was the booth announcer.
So I can't believe you said that. Back when they had booth announcers on television.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I did.
These guys defined my childhood, by the way.
These were the guys. The principal responsibility was to keep the program log.
There used to be a lot of technical glitches in television back then.
Yeah.
You had booth announcers who would pick up the slack when something went wrong with tape to tape.
That's exactly right. A station break was a huge process because you had a control room. You had a director. You had two or three 16-millimeter projectors. You had a slide chain and you had the big 2.5-inch Ampex tape. Let's say you had four commercials in a station break. Then you'd have to roll the tape. Then you'd have to count down and roll the film. Then you'd have to go live to the booth to read copy over a slide and then back to the film. And it was an enormous thing. Periodically, the FCC would come in and check your log. So it was a big deal. At a summer job in 1968, I was making $150 a week. I got to be the weekend weatherman. I'd never done that before. I got to read the news on the morning kitty show, and none of this would happen today. You know, people are qualified to do that job now much earlier than I certainly was. You know, like this was Ryan Seacrest University. Put him in any job when he was 9 or 10, he could have done a better job than I'm doing now. Right. But for me, it was like, holy cow. So I go back to school now to my radio and TV studies, and all of a sudden it's, hey, there's Duck Lips. We've seen him on TV. And oh, my God, what a progression that was for
me. Now, that was what year?
I think I started there in 68, and I stayed
there.
So
the war is going on.
Yeah,
and
that's
right. And you avoid draft and you avoid all that.
In those days, you get the student deferment.
Right.
And Ball State was principally a teacher's college in those days. And so
they wanted teachers.
It was chock full of guys who wanted that student deferment and also the teaching deferment. Right. I was not studying teaching. So the minute I graduated, I was reclassified 1A. Went for my pre-draft physical in April. They said, okay, we'll call you. And then in the meantime, before I was called, Nixon announced the national lottery. They were going to end the draft. They were trying to step down the Vietnamese War. My birthday was 342 or something like that out of 356. So that meant even though I was 1A and had my pre-induction physical and was ready to go, it was over for me. At the time, I didn't know how lucky I was. I felt guilty because I had friends who had gone, and I had friends who had been in the Marine Corps, and I just felt like, well, why me? These guys went. Why shouldn't I go? And then it dawned on me pretty quickly I had been among the really, really lucky.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the political landscape like at Ball State when you went there?
Well, it was just starting to I used to make jokes that they'd have student protests, but it was to get the cafeteria cooks to wear hairnets. but it was creeping in. It was not a hotbed. It was not Madison, Wisconsin. It was Muncie, Indiana. But it was starting, and there were sit-ins and demonstrations, and you know, Bobby Kennedy had spoken on campus. So it was starting. But I wouldn't say it was it wasn't quite lit up the way it might have been in other regions.
You mentioned booth announcers, and I remember I did a YouTube search. I wanted to find this guy that was literally the voice of my childhood. WOR. And he'd come on and say, you know, next on Million Dollar Movie, Barbara Stanwyck tells Gary Cooper where he can go in Ball of Fire. And he just had this voice. It just haunted me.
Well, that's interesting. You mentioned that guy. I had the little kid voice from Indiana. I wasn't that guy, but I still had to do the job. And I can't impress upon you enough how tedious it is to sit there for 8 hours watching programming and logging everything that happens. If you lose audio, you have to log that. If you lose video, you have to log that. You have to log sign on, sign off, every commercial, every station break. And at first, I was scared silly, but then, like everything else, you get accustomed to it and you become blasé. And so I would just start wandering the building. You know, it was so embarrassing. They would, will the booth announcer please report to the announce booth? And I, oh, my God, I've missed the so-and-so. The main announcer was a guy named Rob Stone. tremendous voice and a hopeless alcoholic. I mean, a real alcoholic.
They go hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah, kind of. Certainly in those days, it was not uncommon. He would come in and he would bring a pint with him. And so in the spirit of this, we who were working the sign-off shift, we would always send somebody out for beer. And we would be at the station late at night signing off, and myself and the director and whomever else was there, we'd be drinking beer. Oh, my, was this fun. In those days, you would do a five-minute news summary before sign-off, nightcap news. And then you would do the broadcast statement. You'd read that over the slide of the station. And then they would go to the national anthem with the waving flag. One night, a guy in the props department said, I can reconstruct exactly the station as pictured on the slide. We can make it blow up. So as you're reading the thank you and good night and why not tune in WLW overnight and blah, blah, this. And so until tomorrow, good night and good luck. I have the thing blow
Kaboom.
Up. Yeah. And so we did. Oh, God, we were proud of ourselves. You know, we really thought we had done something. Geez, nobody ever said anything.
No.
It was bizarre. Nobody got fired. Nobody asked a question about it. You know, it was this cult of four or five guys who had pulled this off. And we just thought, well, this is, one, it was fun, but two, you wanted, but no, nobody said anything.
But what's interesting is from school and then doing the job and so forth and the booth thing, the comedy gland is secreting throughout the entire time.
Yeah.
What are you doing for that? Meaning other than blowing up the studio and the sign off, are you writing? Or are you?
Yes, I was looking for any outlet, and it came for me doing the weather. I knew nothing about weather, and you'd go downstairs and they'd have the AP machine and the map would come over, the national map, and you would go to the big magnetic board in the studio and you put the low system and you put the high system and you put the occluded front and you put the rain showers. And so it told you everything. Any time at all that I could monkey with that, I was very happy. I can remember two episodes. One, I was had forecast sunny and dry, and we go off the air and blah, blah. And I go outside, this is a horrible thunder shower. The rain is coming down in sheets, and I was just 20 feet away, just oblivious of this dangerous
monsoon.
Yes, coming through this one of these violent Midwestern summer thunderstorms coming through, attacking the station. I got to be well known because this Sunday night show was on after the ABC Sunday Night Movie. And in those days, that was big programming.
Big show.
Yeah. We got a bunch of complaints. And this was when people were wearing bell-bottom pants. I don't think you could buy regular pants. Got a lot of calls about he's either not wearing underpants or he needs to wear underpants. That's how I distinguish myself.
Do you want to clear that up now? Were you wearing underpants?
Well, of course I was wearing underpants. It was Indianapolis. We're not taught to go out without our underpants.
We're Americans.
Whatever problem was perceived was not mine, I assure you.
Right. And then where do you go from there?
In terms of underpants?
If you wish.
I got tired of sitting in the booth and tired of working weekends. And also, they didn't want me there. They would keep bringing in auditions for my job. That really hurt my feelings. But I couldn't argue with them because I didn't know what I was doing. But the cumulative effect of being on TV a lot there, we got this memo once from the research department. And of all of the people, the anchor team and whomever else, I had the highest Q rating of anybody there. And it was only by accident, really. So I started looking for a job. Couldn't get hired out of the market. Some people I knew were coming in to start up a talk radio station. So I went to work at the new talk radio station.
What was the format?
It was News Talk Sports, WNTS. When I resigned to quit, give my notice to the general manager, the guy said, and it chilled me at the time, he said, really? You're leaving this TV station to go work for a brand new radio station? And I said, yeah. And he said, you will never be heard of again. So I went to the station, worked there for a year, realized that I had to make a move. Nobody would listen. It was a daytime station. This was tremendous. They had a daytime license, which meant the radio station came on when the sun came up and went off when the sun went down.
Literally.
Yeah. And in winter, we were off at 3:45 in the afternoon. And I had the midday shift. I'd come in at noon, and 2 hours later, I'd be going home. It was
enjoy
great.
Your afternoon.
Yes.
We're signing off.
And then in the summer, conversely, you were on to like 9:30 or 10. It was awful. It was Watergate, and people assumed, well, the guy's got a talk show on the radio. I bet he knows everything there is to know about Watergate, and I knew nothing. And people wouldn't call in, and I'd have to read endless pages of wire copy. I remember reading a story about Gordon Strachan, Strachan. His name kept coming up, a special counsel, so-and-so, Gordon Strachan, advisor to the White House, Gordon Strachan. Finally, the phones light up, and I thank God. doctor? And I said, yes. And he says, it's not Strachan, it's Strawn. You're mispronouncing the guy's name. I said, okay, thanks. Do you have a question? No. Click, buzz. So there you go.